As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
That is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 69 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby, here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Before we go on, I just want to say that 69 is a direct reference to the way Mike Kruko called Brandon Belt's 69th splash hit into McCovey Cove. Not Brandon Belt, but the Giants' 69th splash hit. He goes, 69! And it sticks in my head like a Simpsons joke.
69 splash hits, and that's the first in a while.
Anyways, how you doing? Andy, let's start with you.
Grant, I'm okay, man. I'm in lovely Phoenix, Arizona. If I look out to the left of my hotel room, I can see Chase Field, you know. Do you know who designed the ballpark? Actually, like the dugouts and the way that the...
Buck Showalter.
That's right, Mark. Good to see you as well.
Really?
Yes, the uniforms too. Ask him about it sometime. I'm sure he'll tell you.
They put a little strip of dirt in there. Remember that strip of dirt that they had in the mound? And that's where the bunt, I forget who laid it down, but someone laid down a bunt in game 7. And Mario Rivera kind of bobbled it a little bit in the dirt. And it was, it's all because of Buck Showalter. Mark, how are you?
I'm nice.
Come on, man. That's like so 2015.
Yeah, come on, bro.
We got a reputation to uphold.
Since when?
Oh, my God.
My podcast
Grant.
Mate berated me for some stuff on social media the other day.
I did.
He wasn't wrong, for the record.
What'd you do?
Just some unbecoming things.
I mean, Grant, I'll take this to Grant, and we can also do it to the listeners who can contact Mark at mcurry@theathletic.com.
No, don't do this.
Do you think Mark should keep posting?
Yeah.
Or should he stop?
No, he should keep posting, man. You'll never tell him.
All right, well, we'll put it up to the listeners.
Okay. No, I keep posting, Mark.
If you think Mark should keep posting, tweet at Grant Brisby.
You know what? Yes. Okay. Yes. The roundtable heads can decide this. If we get enough that say that they are tired of my shit posting, it will stop. I'll deactivate the account.
Here's the problem, Mark. The roundtable heads listen to us. They're sickos.
That's true.
This is just like one big audio shit post. I mean, that's all that we're doing here. I remember one time I was on Reddit. This was years ago. And someone's like, you know, Grant Brisby, that guy is king shit poster. And I was like, what the? Whoa, what is? Oh, I was like so mad. And then I learned like, no, I that's literally like on my business card. You know, king
yeah, shit poster. Fabian Ardaya, our Dodgers writer, who's like 13, texted me once. And he goes, yo, what's up with all that shit posting? And I'm just like, what are you talking about? What is shitposting? And he took very, he was delighted to explain the concept to me. Then he went back and finished his episode of Puppy Dog Pals and then filed his gamer for the next day. It was really nice.
I'm old enough to remember when you were just called, it was just called Snark. They were like, oh, you know, like when I like started covering the Mets for the Star Ledger and I would tweet, people would be like, oh, this writer is so snarky. And I was like, what is that? Like, what is, that's a word? And that was when I learned what that word is. And I was like 23, Mark the Snark.
Producer Brian has a Mark the Snark Chiron. Oh, that's good. That's good. That's a good wrestler name. All right. So I guess we're going to talk postseason ball. Now, we're recording this on Wednesday, right before we have Phillies, Braves, Dodgers, Diamondbacks. So we can't predict those series. So we'll talk about them in less general terms. But we can, as of now, talk about the Rangers, talk about the Orioles, talk about Creed in the national consciousness again. So let's go. Anyone have thoughts on the Orioles?
This is not a unique thought, and I think it was pretty clear even before game three. But they had too much not good enough starting pitching, if that makes sense. We talked about this probably on the show. Grant may have even said, like, I really like their starting pitching. And I said, no. That's no. They don't have guys who miss bats. They don't have, like, no. But they sort of had relied upon these gentlemen to collect, you know, 4, 5, 6 innings to set up that high octane back end. And it's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to take the formula you've had all year, the way you've played baseball all year, and take guys like, you know, Grayson Rodriguez and Dean Kramer and be like, all right, you get 50 pitches. Like, you're going to have a real tight leash on the second turn through the lineup, you know. But it was just clear that they did not have the starting pitching to get through a lineup right now in the Rangers that is clicking pretty well. Corey Seager, when he's healthy and his swing is right, is like, maybe Yordan Alvarez is a better hitter at this time of year, but Seager's right up there, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Rangers are, you know, they've got a real shot. They're, you know, it looks like they will draw the Astros, although the Twins aren't dead yet, but they'll probably play the Astros. And that should be very interesting. I don't know. What do you think? What do you gents think?
I was really bullish on their rotation. I picked them to win the World Series. Make the World Series, I should say. I still pick the Braves to win it. I don't know if that's going to happen for them now. I don't know if they're going to win the pennant now. However, Kyle Bradish is good. We all agreed on that. Like, he's just a good, you know, missing bats or whatever. He's just a really good pitcher. Grayson Rodriguez was so good in the second half. Really dominant. Really coming in his own. That's the one that disappointed me the most. I was expecting a lot more out of him. He really kind of messed the bed in that very special, like, rookie way where you could see a little bit of terror in his eyes. And you don't know when that's going to happen to guys who are just coming into their own. I was really, really bullish on them. I really was. And I'm sad to see them go, not because the Rangers didn't thump them, because they did, but because I've kind of watched the Orioles all year. They're, like I've said, 3, 4, 5 times. They're my MLB.TV team. When they're on, I generally default to them just because they had a lot of interesting talent, and I'm sad to see them go.
I think the most mind-blowing thing, and I know people have said this a lot, but it really is remarkable. Since Adley Rutschman got promoted, they hadn't been swept until now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
That is really remarkable. So, look, I say that because clearly, and Grant raises this point already, they looked like a young team on that stage for the first time. And also give credit to the Texas Rangers. That lineup doesn't quit, especially when they're going, I mean, like they're going right now. They're scary. So, bad combination. Here's the thing, though. The Baltimore Orioles, they will be back. I would have liked to have seen this with, like, the full bullpen, and that was sort of unfortunate, right? Andy, you referenced that high-octane bullpen. There's been a combination, obviously, of injuries, and also they just haven't been as good down the stretch. Like, they sort of looked like they ran out of that high-octane a little bit. But, look, this is a team that has proven that they're for real. They are stacked. They've got a bunch of really good players all over the diamond. They're not going anywhere. Rough look for the AL East, though, I gotta say. Holy smokes. Rough look. Oh, for the playoffs, the AL East.
As we said all along, the better division was the AL Central.
We've been saying it from day one. Day one.
I do want to point out that, okay, maybe I slept on the Rangers a little bit before the postseason, but that's because they didn't know that they had, like, Mike Trout in his prime. Like, if you had just whispered, like, by the way, Evan Carter's basically Mike Trout in his prime, I would have gone, oh, wow, that really changes things. That helps things. That, how? Like, the guy, he just turned 21.
Evan Carter's had more than one hit in the postseason. What are you talking about?
Well, oh, man, that is just, that's cruel. That's cruel. But the kid's just turned 21. He's sort of like, he's the story of the postseason for me, because that's what it takes to win a World Series, is all of a sudden, you can call it a narrative, a storyline, but something blossoms out of the earth. And, man, he is fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously been pretty dynamic for them, and he's in a position, right, where he's not really expected to carry the club, and so everything they get, you know, offense, defense, is kind of a bonus. And yeah, I mean, you know, like, look, postseason is a forge, and it's not really predictive, but it can be important in kind of shaping players, and so it'll be very interesting to see, like, how Carter comes through it, you know, if he continues to stay hot for all of this. And I do want to just double back real quick to Rodriguez, right? Because he did have that sort of young man's terror sort of look. Bobby Miller had the same thing the other night with the Dodgers. I know we'll get to that. But I do want to say, like, I covered Walker Buehler's first postseason start. He gave up 5 runs in 5 innings, you know, gave up, I think it was a grand slam. And, like, he had that same sort of look at times. And when he was healthy, you know, subsequently, he was one of the best postseason pitchers. So it's not predictive for this is who Rodriguez is going to be or any of that stuff. So, I mean, I think, you know, the Rangers have been aggressive with some of their prospects. And they're an interesting club because they returned prominence or whatever this year, kind of on the back of big time spending. You know, they made these really aggressive trades, you know, for Jordan Montgomery, for Max Scherzer, for Aroldis Chapman. But they also have this position player core coming up through the minors, you know, Yash Young, or however you pronounce that.
Yash Young.
It's not a completely, like, free agent team. It has that sort of, you know, position with younger position player core. And then that's kind of how you want to build it, right? Like, that's, you know, that's kind of what the model should be for a big market team like Texas.
Absolutely. And so Bruce Bochy, I'm hearing a lot of it from disgruntled Giants fans, because you might have a Bruce Bochy, Dusty Baker ALCS, which is funny.
That rocks.
If you're a Giants fan. Yeah, but so when I called for Gabe Kapler to be arrested, which is what people are, like, reading into my column now, which was sympathetic towards Kapler, damn it. But I said, listen, a manager's there not to set the strategy necessarily in 2023. You're not trying to force yourself on the game with squeezes and money ball daring do or what have you. You're there for vibes. Like, you're there to be a presence, a calming presence over a long, long season with a lot of different personalities. And, like, Bruce Bochy, people forget in 2016 that Giants team that flamed out against the Cubs, the bullpen was toast. Bruce Bochy magic couldn't help the 2016 Giants. If you don't have a functional bullpen, if you don't have a functional team, a manager's not going to do much. But if you have a functional team that's clicking on most cylinders, and you look over and you've got Bruce Bochy just sort of, you know, looking over the situation, you feel comfortable. You feel comfortable. It helps. And when you're in the right position, no one brings the vibes like Bruce Bochy.
I'm glad you bring this up about vibes. Let's do a kind of a case study here with a couple of teams. Both of them made the playoffs. And this speaks to your point, Grant, when we talk about managers, what their role actually is. I think part of it is setting a tone, setting an agenda, getting along with the GM, communicating to players. Rob Thomson, manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, has a very clear plan in game one against the Braves. They're going to get aggressive, and they're going to bring their high velo guys into this game, get him active early. Made sense, right? Like, the Braves are a juggernaut, but at 97 plus, like a lot of teams, they got their problems. So what does Rob Thomson do? Tells everybody involved first. JT Realmuto, communicates, hey guys, this is the way we're going to have to do it tonight, and here's why. So when it starts to happen, it didn't seem like people were caught off guard. And this is the reporting that Matt Yelb did, you know, our Phillies beat writer does a great job, wrote all about this. And that struck me. I'm looking at that and go, man, that's the right way to manage, right? Like, I mean, it could have not worked out, right? I mean, those Braves hitters are really good. They could have had a night where it's like, didn't matter if it was 97 plus, they were going to rake. But look, he at least put people in a position where they knew it was coming, communicated the plan, all that stuff.
The most interesting part of what Rob Thompson did is he didn't tell Ranger Suarez that they were going to do that. Which, like, so the debate that they had, as you know, as Gelb wrote about, was, do we want Ranger Suarez to go out there and empty the tank, knowing that he's on, you know, a limited sort of pitch count? Or do we want him to think it's a normal game, just be himself, go out there and pitch, and we'll handle the fallout later when we take him out? And that is, that's kind of the opposite of what managers are often encouraged to do. But that demonstrates to me that this is a guy who understands how to maintain relationships, understands how to sort of, you know, it doesn't have to be like, there's multiple ways to do it. Like if you communicate, whatever, like this is the time of year, right, where like when someone starts, it sounds like Bryce Elder is going to start for the Barbs tonight. And if he doesn't pitch well, he'll be asked after the game, like, you know, when did you find out? And he'll be like, oh, I found out like this morning or whatever. And everyone will be like, they didn't tell him until this morning, as if he woke up thinking, well, I'm definitely not pitching tonight. I've, you know, I'm gonna go see Paw Patrol tonight.
Like he drops a tab, like,
yeah, like we infantilize the athletes so much at this time of year, right? And the Phillies demonstrated, like, look, we're gonna catch this guy off guard, but we will work to rebuild or whatever, you know, to handle it, because that's what we think is the best way to win tonight. I think that's really interesting.
The catcher knew. I know that. Like he brought it.
No, he told everyone.
Correct.
Except okay. for Ranger.
Right.
And so, he also told them, don't tell Ranger.
Right. So, but look, and the points you bring up, Andy, are, you know, Rob Thompson, when he was in the Yankees, I covered him. They call him Topper because he's on top of everything. Okay. Like this dude is like that. He knows people. He gets things done. It is not a shock that he's having success there. Now, good players help, all right? And they've got good players, but clearly he has figured out a way to connect with them, and that story is illustrative. Now, I said this is a case study, a case in juxtaposition. Let's look at the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, here we go.
Okay? The opposite, right? John Schneider makes that move, you know, pulls a pitcher early, all hell breaks loose, and I think the worst part of it was the finger-pointing that has come afterward. All right, because the players are like, well, we didn't see any of that coming.
Define worst part.
What's that?
Define worst part.
And then the GM shows up in his presser a couple days later and throws the manager under the bus. So we've been sitting here wondering, oh boy, the Blue Jays, they just don't, they're talented. They got good players. They haven't quite found the right gear yet. There's your vibes right there, Grant. Maybe they just showed their ass. Maybe that's why when we talk about the Toronto Blue Jays, it's always in the context of, damn, they should be better. Because you look at the names in the lineup, you look at the guys that they've had in the starting rotation, you look at like some dudes in the bullpen that have figured it out. Like, you know, I'm thinking of Jordan Romano, who's like emerged into a great closer the last couple of years. They've got all the tools you'd think you would need to make a run. And every year it's, gee, what happened? Maybe they just showed us why. That was, to me, just as illustrative as what Robbie Thompson did with the Phillies. Okay, when you have a GM and a manager clearly not on the same page, not throwing him under the bus. Boy, what a bad look for Ross Atkins. Horrible look.
So this actually is, it dovetails back into what I'm talking about with Gabe Kapler, right? In that when you're talking about Rob Thompson being tough, shut up. Shut up. This is relevant. Shut up.
I'm listening.
No, I'm talking to Andy.
I can't wait until next August when, you know, and we'll be like, and another thing about Gabe and Buck.
Just I'm making a point. It's valid and relevant. Just pretend I'm like the Diamondbacks beat writer. No, so I've covered a lot of managers, and Kapler to me is, when you say Topper, Kapler's on top of stuff. Like you ask him stuff, he knows the answer. He's thinking, well, why'd you do this? He gives you steps 1, 2, and 3. I considered step 4, but here's why I did it. Like he is diligent like that. He is prepared. There isn't a lot that passes him by. And I think his early Phillies bullpen screw-ups where he's calling for a guy that's not warm yet, like that informed the rest of his managerial career. But the difference between him and Thompson is that you look over at Thompson, maybe there's like a calming, okay, yeah, this guy's got it. Whereas you look over at Kapler and he's like chewing gum and looking like he's going to, you know, tear open his shirt like groundskeeper Willie and run out to the mound and take things over himself. So that's the difference. It's vibes, man. It's vibes. You can be diligent. You can have a real head for the game. But that calming presence of, I mean, all these guys, Snitker, Thompson, I mean, Dusty Baker, come on.
Well, Grant, you once described like Gabe as like the managerial equivalent of Meshuggah, like highly proficient technical metal, right? Where all the pieces are interlocking, right? And there's so much like precision to it. And, you know, sometimes with managing, like you have to be like, you know, like the Grateful Dead or whatever, right? You have to have like, you have to have that technical skill, but also you have to have the ability to communicate in real time. You have to do drums in space, you know, and like Gabe doesn't do drums in space. And that's fine. Like drums in space isn't for everyone. You know, most of the fans apparently hate it. I've learned recently. I think that, you know, you want to have that. You need both things, right? It's not like gut versus feel. It's not, you know, analytics versus traditional stuff. You need to do all of it. And very clearly, right, what the Phillies were doing combines scouting, stats, feel, communication, all those things. And it's a plan of like, you know, hey, look, we're playing a team that hasn't played in a few days. Let's get our high octane dudes in there and just try and, you know, ambush them when we don't have our best starters. And clearly worked. You know, the Braves are monsters, as you saw in game two, and are going to be very tough to put down. But it's a very interesting sort of way of going about it. I had one more thought about the Blue Jays. There's a lot of stories that were like, Blue Jays players disagree with decision to remove Berríos. I would have loved to have seen stories that were Atkins, Schneider disagree with Vlad Guerrero's decision to get picked off second base.
Yeah.
Because, like, look, for as much, I hated that move. I thought it was dumb. Pitching wasn't why they lost that game. They didn't hit.
They did not hit, no. And they haven't hit for a while.
Mediocre offensive team throughout a lot of the season, maybe a little
I
bit better.
I think the point still stands, Andy. Like we are constantly looking at them as like they're underachievers, blah, 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 blah. Well, maybe it starts at the top, you guys. Okay. And I'm not saying, look, Ross Atkins it wasn't in the batter's box and he wasn't standing on second. I get it. Okay. Like, dude, point taken. Like, obviously, like with all this stuff about, oh man, this format screwed up. You know what? Play better. Play better. Yeah, okay, your ball players. Go play well. Your good baseball players, go play well. No. So that said, though, when you're looking at some of the differences of like why there's a sort of failure to launch up there, boy, this looks like a pretty big red flag to me.
Yes, in terms of why the vibes are off, why someone keeps telling Ken Rosenthal to print that I called them paper tigers. You know, you can see it. Yeah. Do you guys have like a who outside of the Rangers, who we've kind of talked a little bit about, and Bochy, like, do you guys have another, you know, vibe team? Because I've been around one for a few days, buddy.
Yeah. Look, yeah, Dodgers, and I'm going to steal your thunder there. It's Grant. Like, man, Grant, okay, let's flash this back to our reverse draft. Do you remember this? Do you remember our reverse draft? So, you know,
Twins,
who went
still active?
So, like, look, first of all, we missed the Twins totally. Right. But like in that reverse draft, that meant we thought they were going to do something. And look, they're here. They're in the dance still. Okay. They're alive, still around. But remember the other vibes team, the Arizona Diamondbacks. Did we not call this? Did we not say that this was the team to watch in that
division?
We've
been on them all year.
We actually have. I mean, no joke. We have been on them all year. Here's another example of, look, an operation where, you know, did well the trade deadline, by the way. I mean, give them credit. Right? Like they did what they had to do. Tommy Pham is a difference maker. I give him credit for seeing. They're like, Tommy Pham is a kind of player who's going to inspire a lot of opinions. So I was actually talking to somebody over there recently and like in Arizona, and you know, they did a lot of homework on this guy. All right. Like, and cause they knew what he could bring, but like, you know, you got to make sure it's right for the mix. It's right vibes. And they put a lot of time and effort and they got it right. All right. So I think part of this is you're watching a young team sort of like not be afraid, which is pretty cool. Yeah, it also helps that like they could field a pretty good 4x100 team over there and just kind of mess people up that way. But also, hey, man, they bolstered themselves at the deadline, and they got the right pieces, and we're seeing some of this stuff come to fruition now. So, dude, credit to them, man. Like, they're fun to watch, and like that Team of Destiny stuff, like, they're it, man. Like, and you know, we were on them though, because I think for the some of the reasons we're seeing now, the athleticism, the youth, obviously Corbin Carroll, the upside he brings, like Christian Walker is like criminally underrated, has been for a long time. I mean, really good player, never gets talked about. Right. So it's a good baseball team and they're having a good week.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Christian Walker gave me a great quote the other night. We were talking about something just related to his approach in a certain at bat. And I was like, so this is going to sound very stupid, but just to be clear, like, you're looking for a ball up that you can drive, right? I'm just like, want to make sure, you know, it's like not a great question. And he goes, yes, my job for this team is to hit balls very hard. I was like, yeah, dude, totally. Thank you.
And he does his job well and has for a while. Yeah.
Their top four in their lineup, and five if you want to include Gabby Moreno, and six if you want to include Lourdes Gurriel. But Corbin Carroll, Ketel Marte, Tommy Pham, Christian Walker. I know that, like, you know, if you're just looking at a Fangraphs chart or something, you'd be like, Carroll's a good player, but the rest of them. But these are, at this time of year, those types of hitters can be, when they're clicking, as they have been over the past, you know, week or so, it's not easy to get through. I mean, you saw what they did to the Dodgers. I mean, they, you know, they crushed Kershaw in game one. They, you know, squeezed Bobby Miller out in five outs the next night or two nights later. And, you know, this is a team that catches the baseball. They, you know, they run. They can steal bases. Like, if they play the Phillies in the NLCS, like, they are going to be running wild. It's going to be very exciting to see them put the ball in play against that defense. Good vibes. Torrey Lovello said the other day, he's like, we do things here differently. You know, we care about things that other people don't care about. And, you know, Sam Blum and I were both in there. Sam, our intrepid Angels writer. And we both kind of like immediately raised our hands with the same question. And just being like, so what do you, what? Hold on. What do you do that no one else does? And he was going a little too far. But it was basically like, the fundamentals matter for this team. Which every team says that. Some teams live it, you know. And some teams like need to focus on stuff like that because of the youth, because of the lack of payroll, all that stuff.
Right. And like, and that with the Dodgers, didn't we all see this storm start of sort of building? Like, right? Like, they, it's remarkable that they came out on top in the regular season, given all the problems they faced with their pitching. Right. Like, I mean, that, and that's the thing about, and that's a credit to them, right? Like, the Astros are in the same boat. Like, these two teams dealt with a lot of stuff. In the case of LA, though, it's just, it's come to roost at the worst possible time. That's it.
Yes, but yes. And so, look, like, you know, Kershaw is clearly somewhat physically compromised and he got rocked in game one. And that, it's just tough to come back from a sixth spot in the first inning, right? The next night or two nights later, you know, Bobby Miller gives up three. The bullpen held him to one for the rest of the night. They didn't hit. And the difference between the Astros and the Dodgers right now is that Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, and Yordan Alvarez are hitting. And Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman are not. It's kind of simple as that. If your best players aren't hitting, it's very tough to win in the postseason.
It's two games, but still, like, to your point, yeah, you don't expect it going forward. The Dodgers, I mean, if you look at what their opening day projected rotation was, where you've got Kershaw, Urias, Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, Noah Syndergaard, like, I thought that was 2018 or something. Like, Noah Syndergaard was in that rotation. And then you said, well, you know, if things go sideways, then we got Bobby Miller in reserve, we got Stone, we got Sheehan, we got stuff, we got ideas. Like, they had depth. They planned for depth. They had depth. And even at the deadline when they needed a starter and they're trying to get Eduardo Rodriguez, and he's like, nah, I'm cool. And I respect that. You know, that's his right. But like they had depth. They tried to address it. They got Lance Lynn, who's fine. I think he had two really bad blow-up starts in the regular season for the Dodgers. But overall, he's a quality start machine for them. They anticipated all this, and it still went sideways. Like, I'm not trying to absolve their brain trust, but sometimes just your pitchers all fall in a wheat thresher. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, Grant. Good stuff.
Wheat thresher. Yeah, cotton gin.
A what?
Wheat thresher.
What's a wheat thresher?
It's the thing that threshes wheat.
Yeah, it separates the wheat from the chaff.
Huh? It's sharp, okay? It's just a metaphor.
Like, am I on the podcast with Chad Jennings? Like, what's going on here?
Sometimes all your pitchers fall in a puddle.
The puddle?
It's a big puddle. They're all wet.
But then you just dry off. Why is that? Like, a wheat thresher, you're dead. A puddle, you just stand under a heat lamp or something. Oh, throw shade at my metaphors.
We're grinding through it, man. There's only one October.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
I still want to say that by the time we record next week, the Dodgers might be in the NLCS. Like, I do believe they can beat the Diamondbacks 3 times in a row. They beat them 5 times in a row in August. You know what I mean? Like, it's just they're still the Dodgers. And all of a sudden, like, if Mookie Betts goes 2 for 4 with 3 doubles and Freddie Freeman hits 5 home runs, you're not surprised that much. It's like, yeah, they're Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. We're talking 2 games. They haven't looked like themselves, but for the Diamondbacks to steal 2 games at Dodger Stadium is incredible.
Yeah, and the Dodgers are, I was talking to some of their people yesterday, and there was just this idea, you know, it's cliche, but it was just like, if we can get a hit with runners in scoring position, like, the ice will break and we'll be fine. But, you know, they haven't yet. And it's only 2 games. It's not a character judgment, but, like, that's why they're losing. You know, they didn't hit. It is interesting to me that, like, we do all this sort of talk about, like, the trade deadline and big names and who needs to move and who have been, like, the 2 biggest trade deadline acquisitions. It's, like, Jordan Montgomery and Tommy Pham, you know?
Right.
Which, like, yeah. I mean, Montgomery's been great. Right, he wasn't good enough to start in the postseason for the Yankees, but, you know, he's going to probably take the ball in, like, game one of the ALCS. And, you know, Tommy Pham has bounced around a lot and has had some, you know, fairly mediocre years. But this year he's been pretty good.
Yeah, lots of hard contact from Tommy
Pham. Lots of hard contact.
He started really slow with the Diamondbacks after the trade deadline. He was, you know, Paul Sewald didn't do so hot either, but they're very glad that they have both of them now. And that's the tricky part of the trade deadline, because the blown saves and the general weirdness with control with Paul Sewald and the slowish start with his Diamondbacks career from Tommy Pham, that almost cost the Diamondbacks a postseason spot. Like, they were fighting until the very end. They had to start their 2 aces in the final weekend because they weren't sure if they were going to get in. Now that they have these guys and they've sort of found their sea legs, that's what makes the trade deadline so hard. You're trying to balance, especially if you're a team on the fringes, you're trying to balance, we need to get into the dance. And then when we're in the dance, we got these guys. The Diamondbacks made it work perfectly, but you can't guarantee that I don't know. It's a fascinating thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things too with the Sewald acquisition. I remember, like, when I might have even given it a grade. Like, I probably didn't like the trade just because I look at Sewald's sort of numbers, his peripherals. Like, he's the sort of player who, like, 20 years ago, Billy Beane would be like, oh, some dummy is going to overpay this guy, you know, because he's a closer or something. It's like, but here's the thing. Paul Sewald's a good pitcher. He makes your team better. And his presence allowed them to have a closer, which they did not have. And it allowed them to, like, slot guys into different pockets so that it made more sense. So, like, Miguel Castro has a more defined role. Friend of the pod, Kevin Ginkle, has a, you know, more defined role. You know, the Gink. I will say this. In the seventh inning the other night, the Dodgers had a little rally and they couldn't get it. And I went down to Nick Pecoro, friend of the pod from the Arizona Republic. And I was like, hey, what are they going to do? And he just turns to me and goes, this game's over. Ginkle's coming in.
Nicktober, baby.
Dude, D-backs fever. Catch it.
Catch it.
Every time I see Miguel Castro pitch, I clap. Like Seal Bluth with Gene Parmesan. Like, I just get, because he's like one of those inflatable guys outside a car dealership. And I just love watching him pitch. It's not like he's an effective, like, super reliever, but every time he comes out, I'm just like, oh, this guy's awesome to watch because he's so long and different. I like different relievers.
Hey, Grant, do you know who Andy spent some time with the other day? Friend of the pod.
I was at Brandon Pfaadt's press conference yesterday. Yeah, friend
Brandon
of the pod.
Brandon Pfaadt. Yeah, that, did you tell him? Like, Andy McCullough, baseball roundtable. Brandon, talk about...
Brandon, how much were you teased for your name as a kid?
It's a fine name. I don't think you get teased for Pfaadt.
The D-backs do have some players where you feel like when you come to the podium, the first question should be like, so tell me a little bit about yourself. We're showing our big city bias. They're a good club. For a team with a negative run differential who was two games better than the Padres and, you know, like scratched and like slipped through the side door to get into the postseason, they're a good little team. Not even a little team. They're a good team. They have good players. Corbin Carroll is a good player.
Really good.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly are good pitchers.
Watching Corbin Carroll, he just is such a good baseball player. Drafted 16th overall. And like, I'm going through the players who are drafted over him. And yeah, you got Rutschman. You got Bryson Stott, who's worked out.
Stott's
You've got Josh Jung, who can still work
Josh
out.
Josh Jung.
But when the White Sox drafted Andrew Vaughn, it was like, that guy is the future. That guy's so good. That guy, you looked at his stats and you looked at what he was doing at Cal, and he's got all of the patience and all of the power. And then you look at Corbin Carroll, who is a little bit more diminutive, perhaps, than your typical baseball player. He reminds me of Andrew McCutchen. Like, in his prime, Andrew McCutchen coming up, doing everything well, just going and running, and he's smaller. He's like this, the same size as Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, right? You know, it's all perspective. But he's doing all the things you need to do on a baseball field, and he's so young and so good, and he's the reason the Diamondbacks are in the postseason, and he's the reason why they still have a chance to win it.
He's listed at 5'10". I think if they have an automated strike zone, that'll come down an inch or two.
I'm 6 feet.
Yeah. He's a very good player. We sort of talk, almost condescendingly towards teams like the Diamondbacks sometimes. Where it's like, it's a good little club. No, like they're a very fundamentally sound baseball team with Christian Walker, super underrated player. I don't know. I mean, the Dodgers can still win the series, but like it's going to be very challenging, I would say.
This is also, I think, and the Diamondbacks are kind of a great example of this. The baseball season is so long that these rosters are not static. We know that. This isn't like the NFL where if you suck because you're 1-4, it's because you do actually suck at football that year. That's not the case with baseball. We know that. So this is why, you know, I love the postseason, because what are obviously our perceptions of a club are based on the whole, based on what we've seen or whatever leading into it, except that changes, and sometimes significantly, because the season is so long. And I think that's what we're seeing with Arizona here. So yeah, I mean, that's a good point, Andy. It's not a good little team. It's a good team.
It's right a good now. Team.
They deserve the credit for that.
My ultimate example of this is the 2006 Cardinals, who finished first in the NL Central with an 83-78 record, right? So I would always make fun of them in my writing, as I'm wont to do, because it was funny to have an 83 team just all of a sudden steamroll other teams with Jeff Weaver. And it was funny, but Cardinals fans were always like, no. The team that entered the postseason was not responsible for the weirdness that happened before. You had injuries, you had guys coming back, you had guys who developed, you had this, you had that. And I've come around on that to where, yeah, that was a team that entering the postseason thought, looked around and said, all these guys are pretty good. We could probably win this. And that's what's going on.
I wish the Phillies-Braves series was like 17 games.
Oh, man.
That's the biggest problem with this format is I want to see more Orioles. I want to see more Phillies-Braves. Like, I want to see these teams.
Why couldn't they just go, and I have no idea if this is feasible. Maybe it's really stupid, but like, I'm with you guys. I want these series to be like a 7-gamer at least, right? Like a 7-game series, like every other round after this. But like, couldn't they just do like a 1-game wild card again and then make it 7 games in the DS?
Wow.
I mean,
weird.
I mean, I don't know. Couldn't they? Like, couldn't you just?
Yeah, no, how about this? How about you have like a shadow bracket that goes on at the same time as the other ALCS, and then you have like Twins, Orioles battling out to get back in, to get back in. And so you have Dodgers, Phillies or Braves going in, they're trying to get back in. It's a little WWE, but I'm in. I'm all
How
in.
How about a run differential World Series? How about that?
Padres are in, baby.
That's a screw the records, man. What should have happened? That's it. No.
Yeah. Right. The 2021 Blue Jays, the best team that never was. I look forward to, I'll be at the NLCS. So either the Phillies or the Braves will be there. Both really fun teams to watch, fun teams to cover. It seemed like the game the other night in the Battery was just bonkers. Really fun.
That play, Michael Harris, it's all the reasons I love the sport. I mean, it really is. Like, it is. I think part of the pastime is complaining about what's wrong with the sport. And that's fine. That's part of the whole thing. It's sort of, if you're a baseball person, that's part of your DNA is to complain. But let's step back for a second and just like, holy shit, was that amazing. Like, what a play. Like, in that moment, like, that ball off the bat, watch, I'm like, oh God, that's trouble. Like, I mean, it's down. In my mind, it's already down. So, you know, Bryce Harper is like wearing it and for that base running or whatever. It's like, you know, these are human beings. Like, and you know, there is such a thing as getting caught up in a moment, even if you are Bryce Harper, right? So that's what makes the play even more remarkable to me is that, you know, in that, you know, Chad Jennings did a story on it today where he takes us through the play. It's really good. 14 seconds is what it took from when Iglesias got set until Olsen catches the ball at first base. And in that 14 seconds, I'm just reminded of like, damn, this is a great sport. And so far, it's been, you know, we've had some lopsided games, obviously. But I mean, the product is still like the pace of it, the tension, all that, the balance of those two things, I think it's been pretty darn good. And so that play, though, was just, wow. Like, I mean, that's a memorable one. Now, not just for this postseason, but when you think about like just crazy things you've seen happen, that's on the pantheon already.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's Jeter flip
territory.
It reminds me of, like you're saying, baseball's such a great sport, so let me bring a basketball metaphor into it. Like Draymond Green, when he kicks LeBron James in the ding-dong and it costs the Warriors a championship, that's not great. When you get Draymond and you get all of the Hall of Fame things he brings, you're going to get some kicks to the ding-dong, right? And when you get Bryce Harper and you get just aggressive and ultra-aggressive and I'm just going to, my helmet's going to fly off and I'm going to be scoring that tying run aggressive, you're going to get plays like this on a ball that I thought was smoked. Thought there was no chance. Mm-hmm. You're going to get, that's the downside, but obviously the upside is so much more relevant that you live with it. So I don't necessarily blame Bryce Harper. I think it would have been cooler for him if he had just not done that. But at the same time, that's Harper's game. That's what he's going to do.
I looked up at a TV last night that was on mute, and it was like around the horn saying like, great Braves play or bad base running by Harper. And you just like want to throw the remote and you're just like...
Like, how stupid can you be?
Like bad base... Like, okay, I would say that I would think that Bryce Harper at 30 years old, having been in the major leagues for, you know, 17 years now, probably can make pretty good reads on balls. And that ball was smoked.
Oh, smoked.
It was a situation where he's trying to score to tie a postseason game and he knows he's got to get on his horse. They have their closer in the game, and so you're not going to get many chances to smoke balls. And look, like, I mean, Michael Harris made an incredible play. And he still was almost safe. He almost got all the way back.
Harris just chucked it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there was a plan when he was trying to get it back in. So I mean, that was even like a mini mistake.
The only reason Riley was even in the picture is because his momentum from shouting at Harris to get to first, he's going 1-1-1, and that just kind of carried him into the middle. You know, it wasn't like Jeter where it's like, we practice that play all the time, buddy. Like, Austin Riley was just, he was like, I was kind of there by accident, actually.
You know, like, and that's the beauty of it, though, to me, because like that, the stakes are what make it, right? Like, and it wasn't a perfect play. It wasn't, except for, you know, what Michael Harris did. That was perfect. And like, I'm trying to think of, what can you guys think of like catches with similar stakes? I had one that popped to mind, and it wasn't a postseason game. It's Dwayne Wise.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna go with. Damn it! That's my favorite catch.
That's the first one. It's almost kind of similar, right? Like on his horse, full speed at the wall, up. Now, White brought it back, which is, I mean, crazy. I don't think Harris did, but like, same, like the ball off the bat, I remember having the same like feeling the first time I saw it. Oh, geez, that's gone, or that's trouble. And all this flash comes out of nowhere and it's an out, right?
It's my favorite catch. Do you know who hit that ball?
No.
Gabe Kapler.
It was? Holy mackerel. Yeah.
Bringing him back.
Dwayne Wise, like, nice guy too, by the way. He ended up with the Yankees later on, like, and I remember, like, just thinking, man, like, that it's cool that somebody, like, you know, it wasn't like he had like a super super long career or whatever, but like he'll be remembered forever. I mean, and rightfully, that was amazing. And I think Michael Harris, good for him, man. You've joined the list. Like, people will be talking about that for a really long time, and they should. It was beautiful.
Producer Brian mentions Gregory Blanco's catch and Matt Cain's perfect game. Ooh, I just wanted to say that Producer Brian said it because I don't want everyone to yell at me for bringing it up on my own. But I was thinking about it. And also, when Yusmeiro Petit was one out from a perfect game, Eric Chavez hit a single to break up the perfect game. That was it. That would get Chavez, and you got to have a perfect game. And Hunter Pence came up that short, and he didn't do anything wrong necessarily. He made a great play on the ball, but like that sticks in my mind. What are we talking about here?
There were so many great catches.
Welcome to Bags and Brisby.
Yeah. The obviously hit the bell. The 2014-2015 Royals were there was a couple in that series against the Angels that come to mind. There was one ball, I believe Howie Kendrick hit it off Jason Vargas. And before the at-bat, Ned Yost went out there and was like, all right, Vargy, I'm going to bring in, you know, a reliever. And Vargas was like, I can get this guy. I can get him. And, like, first pitch, Kendrick hits a rocket into right center field. And Nori Aoki and Lorenzo Cain converge, and they almost, like, overlap. Like, I think Aoki catches it behind Cain almost. Like, it slides through a pocket. Incredible, preposterous catch. And Vargas comes into the dugout and goes, I told you I'd get him.
Oh, man, good.
That's great. That's
there was bad. Also a catch. There was also a catch, I think, the next night where Aoki took the world's worst route possible in down the right field line. And he sort of like falls over for no reason and catches the ball. And the crowd in right center or the right down their line is just booing the crap out of him in Angel Stadium. And Aoki just doffed his cap to them and ran in.
Dude, I love that. Like, I know
we're talking about fun players. Aoki, wildly fun player. Like, I miss that guy.
They once pranked him and sent him out into right field with Dale Swaim's jersey on. Good times. Yeah, someone should write a book about those guys.
Yep. I would put it on my reading list after my book on the Oakland A's. All right. This has been episode
69
of the Round
Table. That wasn't very nice. Grant.
Mark, write the book. But I honestly do want to read it.
Well, I'd like to write it.
It's not writing, that's typing.
One of these days, I'm going to write a book about decay in San Francisco throughout the 70s and how the 1970s Giants tie into that. I actually pitched that to an author who wrote an entire book about the decay of San Francisco in the 70s. And he, unprompted, I didn't even know that he had written a book about that. And he said, yeah, that's not going to sell. And he's right, but I'm still going to write it. That's my book. That's my Oakland A's book. That's my 2014-2015 Royals book. All right, episode
69.
We're going to be back next week to talk about Diamondbacks, Phillies, and Orioles, Twins. All right, we'll see you then.
69.
I was very wrong.
Hi, everyone. It's Meg Linehan here. If women's soccer is your calling, I'm excited to say my podcast, Full Time, is back on May 23rd. Join myself and my new amazing co-host, Tamara Griffin, every Thursday as we take a deep dive into the biggest stories in the women's game, from the NWSL to the Olympics. We'll bring you in-depth reporting that only The Athletic can provide, chat to leaders within the industry, and chart the next phase of the U.S. Women's National Team as they look to rebuild. Just search for Full Time wherever you get your podcasts and follow and subscribe so you never miss an episode.